pair of hair dye tips. Not me. I'm all man.
I know. My pink just isn't pink enough. I've got to put some more in.
My pink just isn't pink enough. I have to put some more in.
You should read that email you just read me.
Oh.
But don't disclose who it is.
I don't wish to sow discord anywhere.
Well, you know, I have to say that individual has not been very kind to us, so.
In the spirit of fraternal harmony, though, I don't know that I should read this email.
But you won't reference anything as to who the person really is. I mean, just read it, and then if that person feels like it's them.
It could be any station, any show.
Anywhere, yeah, any frequency.
Really, it could be in any building.
Any radio family.
Any corporation. You're a bad person, Cyrano.
You know what? That person's a bad person.
Well, it's...
Because you've told me things about this person that I know that nobody else knows. That is not a good person.
All I'm saying is I don't know that I wish to sow any bitterness by reading this email.
But you're not even identifying the person.
Well, it should be very clear that we're speaking about a show now.
A show.
I mean, there is a person, and then there are other people.
There is a show at the end of the title.
Thanks.
What? Just like us, the Rick Emerson Show. Everyone has a show.
Here comes the text message.
Do you still have my phone?
Oh, I do.
Did
over
you check
here.
My messages?
Let me see who it is. I'm opening Sarah's pink razor now.
Who's it from?
It's from Justin. Can I open it?
Sure.
All right. View now. Do I hit enter or do I press this?
You hit the button in the middle. It takes a minute.
It's just a picture of Nate's face. Something has gone wrong here. Wait, no. Mailbox. This is gripping radio. 3. Okay, I'm pressing 3. Oh, this is a slow...
I know, that's why I hate my phone.
Oh, this phone sucks.
I know.
Oh, yeah, no, he's guessing which show we're referring to. Yes, Justin, you are correct, sir. The funny thing is, I don't even have to clarify what show it is we're talking about, what radio cluster this show operates under the aegis of.
Not in the CBS radio family.
No.
We're a tight-knit bunch.
You gotta stop.
What?
Because your sarcasm is very...
I am not being sarcastic.
Is evident to a deaf person.
I was totally not being...
I'm gonna fold this, and I'm gonna set it over here. We might get to it later. We'll get to it. I'm gonna seal that in the envelope.
Now we're all extra curious.
Yes, it's almost as if I had planned it that way. Speaking of which, coming up at 2:20 today, we got a big announcement about the future of this radio station and about the programming of this radio station. Yeah, I'll give part of it away. Everybody knows, maybe you don't know. Phil Hendry, who, you know, you got to give it up to Phil Hendry, man. That guy. And, you know, Tim worked with Phil Hendry.
When the show first began.
Tim Riley, our very own Tim Riley, actually worked with... We have played air checks. I don't have time to do it today, but we have actually played air checks of Tim Riley and Phil Hendry doing a show together, being on the air. Where you were... Was it K-Hay?
Well, he worked at KBEN, which was right down the hall from K-Hay.
All right, so it was what they call... it was a radio station. It used to be... There was a... You know, it'd be one
AM,
radio station.
Or,
yeah, there was an AM station and an FM sister station, and that's it. And so, yeah, you were always literally down the hall from each other.
Yep.
And it was always a country station and a talk station for some reason. And so Hendry worked down the hall from you, and there are actually air checks we played of Tim doing his show on the country station, and then, like, he would... Tim, you know, like, K-Hay, let's go to the phones. And it's Phil Hendry, right? Down the hall in, like, a prod room. In a production room calling in. Now, when Hendry worked with you and he would call your show, would he call as any of the characters that he has now? Or
no.
They were just sort of generic characters?
He was Orpheus from Fester's Lagoon, which was the character he only did on my show back then.
That's fantastic. That's gold, man.
Because we used to invite... I did a nighttime show. And we used to invite all the listeners to this big party at Fester's Lagoon.
Fester's Lagoon.
Well, people thought... So we used to give phony directions on how to get there.
I wonder if you were responsible for the deaths of anybody.
Well, probably
lost in a swamp somewhere.
Every Friday night, there was this big party going on at Fester's Lagoon, and we give different directions on how to get there every Friday night.
The radio man said that we go... Mommy, where are we going? Why are we there? Why isn't there any food? It is the sound of a car going off a cliff somewhere in the dark, following your directions. Phil Hendry and Tim Riley inadvertently leading hundreds to their deaths. Well, anyway.
Now, who would know in Southern California that this town didn't exist?
There
are a finite number of towns and cities.
You know what I've never heard happen? Normally I would not sit and spend a lot of time jawing, as they say, about another radio show, but Henry's retiring. This is his last week, And
he's getting up there anyway.
Everybody knows him. Well, he's in his 50s, you know, and you know whatever. He's made a big pile of FU money.
And he only started doing talk radio when he turned 40 years old.
Yeah, he's a late bloomer. He really is. So, anyway, so even the thing about Henry is that, you know, he, whatever anybody thinks, and I know people who like his show, I know people who don't, I know people who think he got way too right wing after 9/11, and whatever, doesn't matter. I'll say this, though, that Henry is among the most talented people I've ever heard in terms of a radio show, in terms of pure talent. There's a really short list of guys that are just, you know, they're just so good they make it. It's like I was at Storm and the Balls last night, and there was this guy, Dave. I met a bunch of listeners, a guy named Dex, a guy named Tom, a guy named Dave, and Dave's in a band called Green Magic, so like a stoner metal kind of a band. And he was saying, he's like, you know, he said the same thing that I've heard so many people say. He's like, you know, Storm and the Balls are so good. He's like, why do I even want to pick up a microphone? He's like, why do I even want to pick up a guitar after watching those guys? And it's true. I've heard more bands say that about Storm. It's like they see Storm and it's like, why should I even try? What is the point? That's how I feel when I hear, you know, Clyde Lewis, who does Ground Zero. So I've heard Clyde do Ground Zero sometimes where it's like so good that it just pains me. So good, it's like, why should I even come to work? And the same thing with Henry. I have heard shows with Phil Henry where it's like Henry as the host, Henry as the fake guest, Henry as David G. Hall, his own program director, and then a caller, and three of the four people are Henry, and I'm just sitting there listening going, why should I even try to be funny? Why should I ever again attempt to do a radio program? So he has been doing a fond farewell all this week. And Friday, and it's no fooling. It's not a joke. It's not a gag. It's not a kooky radio bit. It's not one of those fake, you know, the FM gags where it's like, no, and then I'm retiring. And, you know, one of those stupid things they do, and then he's not. It's not like a Howard thing where Howard threatened to quit over and over again before he did. Henry's really done, I think. And he may come back someday, but it's not going to be for a while. So this is his last week. And Phil Henry's final program is going to be Friday night. And whether you are a fan or not, I would encourage you to listen, by the way, 7 to 10 p.m. Whether you are Phil Henry, whether you know it or not, whether you are a Phil Henry fan or not, I would encourage you to listen to his final program on Thursday, because it really is the end of an era. It really is. Henry's one of those guys, love him or hate him, that they will talk about years from now as a guy who created something brand new that nobody had done before, really. Anyway, so coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll have a little announcement about the future of that time slot. About the future of what is going to be happening in the Phil Henry slot. Nobody can really replace Phil Henry, but there is going to be something sliding into that slot, and we'll talk about that later on. All right. Well, let me get these four calls. Scotty, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get these four calls. Then we'll go to the city desk. Then, while we're at the city desk, we will take some clarifying questions about the mystery sound. Then, at the bottom of the hour, we'll talk to Sarah's friend Lisa Not Goddard, who is getting a tattoo in an unfortunate place and needs to be talked out of it before she completely ruins a very attractive.
I sent you a picture of her.
Of Lisa Not Goddard?
Yeah, because we did some promotional pictures for our friends.
To my Rick Emerson or my other one?
The other one.
I've got the secret don't spam me email address.
Yeah, I sent it to that one. And I'm sure that's okay to use because it's a...
Without correlation.
I got this call about 2 minutes after you called today.
Fantastic.
Rich Benson was filling in today.
Rich, apparently, he's a can-do guy. He's an American, Ed.
That's right.
Now, I know you have to try to feign your excitement today because you are, in fact, covering a World Cup.
Yeah, enough.
Do you guys have to draw straws or something for this? Because Roop was talking about it the other day.
Yeah.
And then it was like Costantini.
Well.
Now it's you. Are we playing in the World Cup still?
No, we're out. We're gone.
I'm reading now from the CNN copy. Listen, I'm reading now off the page. This is the CNN copy they sent to me today. It's a critical day for the U.S. in the World Cup.
Yeah, it's critical. They went into critical condition.
Oh, so it's over.
It's over for them. Oh, yeah.
Well, okay.
Is that about yachting?
Rick, the whole thing I wanted to see on this World Cup thing was just, you know, how many people really got into this thing. So it was when it first started. I went down to the sports bar. And they were filing in at 11 o'clock to watch this stuff. And I said, you know, a lot of people like it. Now, the ratings are up, obviously, on TV for these things. And, you know, but you have to really, I guess, have it ingrained in you. There are a lot of kids that grow up now and play soccer. But, you know, I really hated it from the moment they forced me to play it in gym and I got kicked in a bad spot.
You know, Jesus God. That moment haunts us all. Sometimes it's that roping climbing class. Here's the thing about soccer. I think Tom Likas was making this observation a while back. You know, the thing about soccer is nobody really wants to play soccer. Soccer's a thing that your parents force you into when you're a child. Or you do it because all of your other friends, their parents are forcing them to do it. But then it's like once you in high school, you discover girls or just, you know, you learn the ability to say no to your parents. You just stop playing soccer. And you never go to another soccer game until you have children in the suburbs and you decide that between trips to the Starbucks and Applebee's, you need to take them to soccer games.
And that's it.
That's it.
Then you become a soccer mom.
It's true.
And I heard a funny story about it. In fact, Dick Uliano told me this one. He's in Washington, and he remembered his daughter was playing soccer. And he looked across to another field, and there were a bunch of kids playing baseball. And the mother said to him, "Oh, no," she says, "baseball." She says, "That takes too many skills. You have to use, you learn to hit and do all kinds of things. Soccer is great."
Baseball.
In other words, it was kind of a homogenized sport. It was pretty easy because you just kick it around.
So baseball is sort of the chess to the checkers of World Cup soccer.
Yeah.
Okay. Since this is heinously out of date, apparently, and we did apparently lose, let me read what the slug was, though. This is from the CNN copy. In order to advance, the U.S. needs to beat Ghana. Now, let me just tell you this. Here's a few things about Ghana. I don't know where it is. No one knows where it is. I don't know what they do there. I don't know what the people from Ghana look like. I don't know what they speak. I don't know what their currency is. I'm unclear about whether that's actually another planet. I know nothing about Ghana. And this is followed up by Italy needs to beat the Czech Republic. Now,
Italy won.
Okay. Really? And I'm glad. Because here's the thing. You can't lose to a country where everybody is like living in, you know, they're all living inside like a burned out car. You know what I mean?
Well, they did.
If you lose to the Czech Republic, you're going to have to kill yourself. Your life is over.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
Where is Ghana, by the way?
Ghana's over in one of the African nations.
Okay, so we did lose?
We lost 2-1.
2-1 in a gripping, nail-biting finish, I'm sure.
You know, I put this thing on just now, just for the heck of it. Brazil is playing Japan, and they had, I guess it was an ESPN today, some guy, he says, "Here, let me be a soccer announcer." He goes, he kicks it to midfield, he kicks it back to midfield.
Yeah.
You know, they just went on and on mocking it. But an AP guy had a really, really neat headline today. It was "Here today, Ghana tomorrow."
Ah, oh, wait, hold on. That's worthy of the. Where's my little there? Thank you. So if you happen to talk to anybody from soccer, make the ball smaller. All right, make the ball smaller. Make the goal bigger, one of the two, and then get back to me when that's taken care of.
Kick a golf ball around.
That's what I'm saying right there. Well, although Sarah actually knows. Did you say you had friends that were calling in sick? I'm not calling in sick. They were legitimately sick, but they were going to drink to the World Cup today?
Yeah, so, they asked if I wanted to come over and watch it at their house at like 7 o'clock this morning.
That's how to capture the youth demo here in America. Just tie it into boozing somehow. If you can do that, tie it into some sort of self-abuse, my friend, the young people will follow like you're the Pied Piper of Hamelin.
7 o'clock, come on over, we have a keg.
That's
gonna watch the game.
There you go, you heard it, kids. Party at Ed McCarthy's house.
That's right.
Ed McCarthy, enjoy the rest of your day, sir. Enjoy living in the glorious South. Enjoy the warmth and the hospitality and the fine culture, and we will talk to you soon.
97 right now.
Oh, see, why you gotta lord that over us like that? Oh, it's not right.
7 degrees.
All right. Thank you, Ed. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Bye-bye, then.
All right, there you go. That's Ed McCarthy.
So those Ghanaian soccer players must be the only people in Africa who had something to eat today.
They ate one of the neighboring countries. 503-733-2970. That was Tim Riley who made that cultural observation, by the way.
By the way, it's now illegal to play pool during the day in Uganda, which is an East African country. It's banning it.
Really?
Because it's said to encourage crime. Young people often play pool while drinking, doing drugs, and planning robberies. Despite the daytime ban, folks are still allowed to shoot pool at night.
Okay. Well, as long as they got their priorities in order. Okay. Rick, about that big announcement coming up. Are you fired again? If not, I will check in tomorrow to see if
we don't
fired.
Get to make announcements about that.
I was going to say, that's the announcement you'll never hear. There's this saying in old Audie Murphy films. What is that, All Quiet on the Western Front? You never hear the bullet that kills you. Because it's like, you know, the movies here, they're ricocheting, the guy falls over. And there's this whole speech in All Quiet on the Western Front where the guy's going, kid, it ain't like that. It ain't like the movies where you hear the ricochet. You never hear the bullet that kills you, kid. One moment you're here, one moment you ain't. You're going back home and your mom is crying your name. You never hear the bullet, kid. That's kind of what it is with us. You're never really going to hear us go, hey, tomorrow, this is going to be a Spanish station. And I'll be at home crying. You're not going to hear that at all.
No, it's always a form that doesn't work like, we'll call it Debbie, music for girls.
We'll call it The Wave. Yeah, that's what it'll be. I think they've about run the course of name stations, by the way. I'm not going to start a whole bit about name stations, but I think that's an experiment whose days may be waning. Waning. Wane. See, it's kind of... Here's Tim... Are we doing the City Desk here?
Yeah, we might as well.
Here's the City Desk with Tim Riley.
From higher top to bottom of the Koi Tower in downtown Portland, Oregon, CBS presents the City Desk News Beat. Tim Riley reporting. Well, thanks for everyone who filled out their resumes to become police chief of Portland, but Rosie Sizer, the temporary one, will get to keep the job after all. She was the commander of the Southeast Precinct. She has overseen police responses to protests downtown, including when the president was in Portland. She oversaw the shutdown of peace activists, those smelly people in front of City Hall for so long.
Really? Is that true?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, good for her.
She also received a written reprimand from, member for a former police chief, Mark Kroger.
Wait, hold on. She received a reprimand. Let me guess what it's for. Mm-hmm. Excessive use of force.
This is from officers who failed to investigate a downtown assault of two off-duty police officers in 2003.
Ah, okay.
She was promoted to commander in 2001 by then-Chief Croker. She's commander of the Central Precinct, served as head of the Detective Division, and worked with Trout. And yes, she is married. She is the wife of former Multnomah County Sheriff Dan Noley, because people wondering, they weren't discussing her personal life, now you know. And she's the daughter of a 32-year veteran of the police bureau.
Okay. I was just saying that her hair was fairly short in the front and
that
fairly long
in the back. That may be a regulation
the
ladies' police.
Oh, wait, no, that's a different haircut. Can I see that?
Yeah, she looks much better now.
No, this, relatively speaking, this is not a bad photo of her.
No, she's a handsome lady.
This?
I mean, attractive young.
She's a sweet spirit.
It's only skin.
That's what my uncle used to tell me at night.
Okay, here's a story. Should we move along to the scary soccer story?
Dude, you move on to whatever you want. I don't care.
Okay.
I don't give a damn.
Okay.
This story is messed up.
This story is completely creepy. Not as creepy as this one that I pulled this morning and then shredded because it was too disgusting to read on the air.
So pay close attention because there are no shortcuts to this at all.
Okay.
It's a long story.
All right.
A stalker hid under a woman's bed for 2 days just for the chance to be alone with her. How he got the keys to her house is the scariest part, and it's a serious reminder to all you ladies to be cautious before handing over your keys to who you think might be a gentleman.
Parking valet. Posed as a parking valet.
Well, the nightmare started at Holy Cross Hospital, this is in Washington, D.C., where the victim met her stalker who was working as a parking valet.
Yeah! Aww. That's what I'm talking, the mind of a stalker, baby.
See, whenever anyone takes my car, I always just take off the car key.
Oh, hey, I never thought about that.
No, I always do. I'm a paranoid freak. I always just take off the car key, hand them that key.
I gave those guys at Courtesy Ford my whole ring last night. Well, I'm sorry. Okay, we'll never go home. House in flames.
You're so sweet and trusting.
The best part is how I immediately knew the best way to stalk a woman and get her keys. That's fantastic.
So he gets access to his keys, then takes that opportunity to get those keys copied. So that's something for everyone to think about. So her life dramatically changed. She was fearful when she hears strange noises and doesn't know where they come from.
Let's all imagine I wonder what those... Just conjure up in your own head right now what those noises might have been.
So this fellow named Carlos...
Gasping, wheezing kind of noise.
His name is Carlos Castellanos Fiera. He said, quote, I fell madly in love, and that blinded my judgment. I beg your forgiveness.
So he lived under her bed.
Mm-hmm.
For how long?
Let's see here. 2 days.
Okay. And so he would... see, here's the worst part about this. I mean, there really are no good parts here. So he... All right, so
here comes the worst part.
Okay.
So Judge Herbert Dixon hands down a 3-year sentence, including treatment for mental illness and sex crimes.
Mm-hmm.
The court documents show this man had a change of clothes, condoms, a power cord, and latex gloves with him under the victim's bed at the time of his arrest.
Oh. Oh, no, that's gone to a
When investigators searched his home, they found vacation photos of his victim and a wedding video. They later determined the items were stolen from her ex-husband's home.
Isn't this just, you know, and it's an odd combination of items that is always more unnerving. Like, if a guy just has, a gun, obviously you don't want a guy into your bed with a gun. But a guy has a gun and a knife, okay. Guys under the bed with some, you know, a roll of duct tape, that's fine. But it's when he's got, like, roses and a bone saw. I mean, that's kind of when you're just, that's when your brain just begins to fold in on itself a little bit and everything just sort of goes a fuzzy gray. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for you to continue. I'm waiting for the next shoe to drop.
The disturbing video shows the convicted stalker carefully hiding his video camera on a desk in the victim's bedroom.
Oh, and he filmed her.
When he hears the woman and her boyfriend come into the apartment, he disappears under the bed. He remained there for 2 days until he was discovered by the victim's boyfriend.
Oh, so they're having sex, and he's filming it, and he's 6 inches away the whole time under the bed, no doubt engaged in some sort of sordid activity.
Oh.
Okay, here's the... You know the terrifying thing about this story?
What?
Apart from the under the bed and the condoms and the, what was it, electrical
cable? And the power cord?
And the power cord.
Power cord, latex gloves.
And condoms.
That's supposed to power the weed trimmer. The worst part about this story, the very worst part about this, is that you go through several stages as a young child in America, and then you grow into an adult, and every child goes through the... Mommy, there's a monster under my bed stage. And then what do your parents do? Your parents, they take you by the hand, they sit you down, they talk to you in soothing, consoling, dulcet tones of voice, and they say, no, sweetie, there's nobody under your bed. Those things don't really happen. And so you wander off into the life that you have chosen for yourself, innocent, ready to take on the day, ready to go out and be the best you can be. And then a goddamn guy lives under your bed with a knife and a roll of electrical tape and a camera for 3 days. It ain't right.